Take a listen to this.
Hey, Liz Lemon. I've been reading the newspaper to come up with some ideas for some topical sketches. So this week, can we do business section?
Tracy, I love it that you're trying to help.
Everything is great.
Thanks to Angie.
Yeah, word, where is my lovely wife?
Oh, she had to step out. She had a hair appointment.
Oh, I'm going to a strip club now.
What? No, I can't let you do that.
I'm sorry, Liz. This is who I am. You can't ask a bird not to fly. You can't ask a fish not to swim. You can't ask a tiger not to turn back into a Chinese dude at midnight.
Of course, that's Tracy Jordan, the antic, unpredictable comic star of TGS with Tracy Jordan, the fictitious sketch comedy show at the center of the multiple Emmy Award-winning NBC series 30 Rock. And Tracy Jordan is, of course, a creation of the antic, unpredictable comic star Tracy Morgan. Since his early days as a stand-up comedian, through 7 seasons as a Saturday Night Live cast member, and now as a central character on Tina Fey's 30 Rock, Tracy Morgan has always left his audiences laughing and wondering just where the line is between his bigger-than-life characters and his bigger-than-life self. It's a question that's easier to answer now that Tracy Morgan's very funny, very honest, and very revealing new memoir has just been published. The book is called I Am the New Black, and Tracy Morgan joins me live from New York this morning. Hello, sir.
Hey, what's up?
Glad to have you on the show, man. Thanks for making the time.
Thank you for having me.
On that note, you're working on one of the biggest shows in television right now. How often can you actually get away from the set of 30 Rock to promote a book?
I'm promoting it. I wrote it, and it has to be putting it out there. You know, I'm just whenever I have time on the weekends, and it's like the process of working on a book. My life is not totally 30 Rock. I spend time with my kids. I spend time with my friends. I'm not there 24/7. I don't live in the TV set.
As I say in the intro,
it doesn't stop raining when I walk outside. It's
still rain. Well, listen, we're talking to you in Manhattan today. And as an audience, we've come to know you in a couple of real Manhattan settings, SNL and 30 Rock. But your formative years were spent a few miles from there in the Bronx. Growing up, Tracy, just how big was the gulf between Manhattan and the Bronx?
The Bronx was where you went to go party. The Bronx is where the flavor was, you know. For me, it was the Bronx. That's where hip-hop was created for my generation, you know. Manhattan is where 42nd Street was. Manhattan is where, you know, Jacob Javits Center was. Manhattan is where Madison Square Garden is. When you're a little kid and you see these big buildings, you see how tall these buildings are? Imagine being a little kid. Of course. Where I came from, I didn't see white people. It was all black. I don't come from the suburbs. I come from the projects. So it was a different place to see, you know, these rich people, these aristocrats. And my dad would always show me that. Like, yo, listen, the ghetto's not the only place in the world. It was just a whole other world. It was a world away. Yet it was so close, but we were worlds apart.
Tracy, it's almost a cliche for comics to say that telling jokes became a survival skill growing up, you know, in the schoolyard or in the streets. But how true is that for you?
It is. You know, I couldn't fight well. My oldest brother had cerebral palsy. My oldest brother had spinal meningitis. I couldn't go get him when the bullies was bullying me, so I made him laugh to keep him off my butt. And that was how I honed in on my skills. It was like survival. I didn't have the fly clothes and all that. So when I went to school, in order to keep the cats from joking on me, I had to be funnier than them. Plus, you know, it was a way to get girls.
Right, right. The funny guy gets the girls.
Yeah, you make the girls laugh, they love you.
But the athletes also get the girls, right?
The athletes get the girls. But when you was the entertainment, when you was the funny guy in the neighborhood, you was revered. You was protected. Nobody messed with you.
Well,
even made the killers laugh.
Where I was going with that is people may not know that you were actually a pretty serious athlete in school, in track and in football. But you were also honing your comedic skills. And you did this through something you call snapping sessions with your friends. What exactly are snapping sessions?
Yeah, when you make mama jokes. Your mama's so ugly. You know, it was like that. That's what we did to entertain ourselves. You know, that was what we did as bonding.
It's almost the way hip-hop MCs face off, that kind of thing?
Yeah, battling. Yeah, there's always going to be beef in hip-hop. Battling.
Tracy, there was a point in your life, still early on, when your dad was dying, that you did, you went and sold drugs on the streets, but you write that you weren't a very good drug dealer. Why and what did that experience
thank
do for
God
you?
Thank God I wasn't a good drug dealer. And thank God I never wanted to make a career out of it. Thank God.
What did that experience do for you as a comic?
It taught me how to hustle. It taught me how to stay on my grind in the streets of New York. And I still apply the same business principles to show business. It's all supply and demand. You know, it's all supply and demand. Now my drug is not crack. Now my drug is comedy. The more funny, the more money.
Do you feel like your job is a hustle?
Hustle means you're on the field. When you're on a basketball court, you got to hustle.
Yeah.
You got to get back on defense. Hustling means you got to stay up at night writing jokes. You got to stay up. You got to hustle out there to get the material, to observe what's going on.
You feel like you still have to hustle that in showbiz, too.
Yeah, to watch people. The early bird gets the worm. I got to stay ahead of the game. I got to hustle. I can't be with the game. Michael Jordan was he was the best because he hustled the hardest on the court. And he was the smartest, always on the court. Had a high basketball IQ. When I'm on a stage, I want to have a high basketball. I want to have a high comedy IQ.
I got you.
That means I
got
to hustle. I got to read. I got to watch TV. I got to study. I got to study Richard Pryor. I got to study Martin. I got to study Sansa. I got to study Chris Rock. I got to get my hustle on.
I got you.
And that's how intense it is with me. Big meant nothing to Michael Jackson. Bigger meant something to Michael Jackson. But biggest meant everything. And that's what he became, the biggest.
Do you want to be the biggest?
I want to be the biggest of my generation. Of my generation. Of my pack, I'm always going to pay homage to the people who came before me. Because without them, without Lenny Bruce going to jail for freedom of speech, I wouldn't be able to get up on stage and say what I say. I wasn't born doing jokes. No, I lived a life. I went through things. Unfortunately, Lord knows I've made my mistakes. And people think it's like crazy just to speak on it. No. I'm telling my story. E! Hollywood Stories is not telling my story. I told my story. And that's all I did.
Let me ask you about another person who is very influential in your life. I mentioned your dad earlier, and your dad plays a big part in this book. You call him a hero. Tracy, he died of AIDS when you were a teenager. What did it mean, not just to lose your dad, but to lose your dad to what was still a very misunderstood disease at the time?
It was unfortunate. It was just sad for me. I was a kid. I was 17 years old. It was me losing him twice. Once to Vietnam, and the second time to AIDS. You know, my father, when he came back from the war, man, he was messed up goods, man. He was messed up goods, man. You know, just like a lot of other kids, a lot of people, guys my age, who lost their dads to the war. My father fought that war every night. You know, he used drugs over there just to ease the pain. Just like a lot of millions of kids that died over there.
Right.
A lot of kids my age never saw their father who died over there. So I have to also feel blessed that I had him for the time that I had him.
Your dad started using heroin in Vietnam, right?
Right. Yeah. He picked up a bad habit like a lot of those young teenagers did. And I always think about what my father was thinking about when he was on the transport plane going over there at 17 years old. And I have an 18-year-old son. My baby's 18 years old.
Yeah.
And I couldn't imagine.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine. When he came back from the war, my grandfather told me your father was damaged goods. And it was profound to me because my father was my age when I wrote this book, and I was my son's age when he died.
Yeah.
So that's how deep that gets. But, you know, I'm the new black. I've also come into my manhood. And that's the joyous part of it.
Let me ask you, what's the most important lesson that you keep from your dad?
Learn to learn. Keep your mind open. Don't be prejudiced to no one or anything. Keep your heart good and keep your mind open. And he used to always tell me, man, the greatest sin of all is wasted talent. Don't waste your talent. And parents, if you see your kids have a talent, hone in on it. Give them direction and guidance and hone in on their talents. Do not discourage them. And I tell the youth, don't waste your talent. The greatest sin of all is wasted talent.
There are a lot of parents that discourage their kids from getting into the
entertainment. And we do it subconsciously.
Yeah.
We do it subconsciously to our own children. You know, it's crazy when people tell you when you're a kid, you can grow up, you can be anything. And then you grow up and become successful, and they're the first ones to turn their back on you. This doesn't come with instruction. People say, well, why now? Why write the book now? Why not? The Spirit moved me now. I don't have to have a reason. The Spirit just moved me. Because the Spirit moved me. And that's all that is.
Well, Tracy, you certainly didn't waste your talent. It was after your dad died and after you got married that you started doing stand-up, although you weren't actually hitting it out of the park every time when you first began. I want to ask you about one of your early shows, because we are speaking to you from Canada, of course. What do you remember about your first show in Montreal when you came up and did Just for Laughs?
Man, I bombed, man, but thank God I wasn't famous yet. Nobody saw it.
Why did you bomb so badly in Montreal?
Because I was a kid. I didn't know how to do show business. Like I just said, this don't come with instructions. You got a bomb. How is she going to be good? If you're a doctor and you're a surgeon, you're going to lose a couple of patients. Trust me. You're going to lose a couple of patients. How else are you going to become good? But the thing is how you handle it. And that's what I Am the New Black is about. All the things I went through in that 200 pages, I should have balled up in a corner somewhere and went away. But I didn't. This is what I got from my mother, my stubbornness. I refuse.
Well, you kept going. You didn't let the early rejections
bother
you. And then another important person in your career comes in, and he's also a Canadian, by the way, which is Lorne Michaels.
My man, Obi-Wan Kenobi, called me yesterday.
He's
just to check on my health. Lorne Michaels, I love him. He's like my dad, man.
He's the man behind SNL and 30 Rock. Tracy, do you remember when you first met Lorne Michaels? What did he have to say to you when you first auditioned for SNL?
He talked to me about, you know, he was really, when I first got the show, we had a meeting, the very first meeting, and it was more or less about him just wanting to see where my head was, see if I was going to be cool to have around. And he wanted to see where my head was, and I guess he took a liking to me because my head was on my family. My head was on my relationship with God first and then my family. And as long as you make decisions based on your family, you're going to be all right. When I stopped making decisions based on my family, based on the well-being of my family, and I started to think about myself, that's when I started drinking. That's when I started getting DUIs and all those things. And I got discouraged my first year because I wasn't in much. And I started to believe the hype of it's racist, it's racism, and this and that. And no, Lorne Michaels grabbed me in his office one night and he told me, you're not here because you're black. You're here because you're funny. And that was the beginning of me realizing that funny has no color. If it's funny, it's funny. If it's corny, it's corny. So I've never put that. I've always thought, my father always taught me, think in terms of universal. That's where Michael Jackson was. That's why his music touched all four corners. People that don't even speak English in other countries knew Billie Jean. I just want to touch people, man. I want to touch people's psyche. Maybe I'll change somebody's mind with my sense of humor. And maybe I'll make somebody laugh that ain't got nothing to laugh about.
And Lorne Michaels still plays that fatherly role to you now?
Lorne called me yesterday just to see how my health was. You all right? You cool? Yeah, I'm good. All right, call me later. All right, if you need anything, call me. All right, later, Lorne. Cool. You got that relationship, man. I would never let them down.
Do you think of those as happy times, the SNL years for you?
Absolutely. I mean, people take the little Cherry O'Terry and Chris Kattan thing. You know, I don't have anything against those people. But out of 200 pages of everything that I went through in my life, people are focusing on that because it's controversial. And it's a shame. It's so sad because I made myself so easy to like. And it's unfortunate that we just never got, you know, cool.
But you did say, where are they now? You did say that.
Where are they? I mean, these people never... They looked at me like I was invisible. I was all, but I'm not, forget about them. Let's take it back to when I was younger. Let's take it back to people not expecting me to become anything. Let's take it back to when I was in high school and I was voted most unlikely. Let's take it back to my track coach who didn't think I was ever going to amount to anything. Forget Cherry O'Terry and Chris Kattan. Let's take it back to the people who touched me in my life directly, who looked at me when I was a kid like I wasn't never going to amount to anything. Now that I've made it, they want to treat me like I'm the golden child.
Right.
How do you think I feel now? And this is my family. This is my blood. Let's take it back to me being 7 years on Saturday Night Live and my mother never coming to see me once. The woman who carried me for 9 months. Let's take it back to that. You think I'm a 40-year-old black man. You think 200 pages is enough for me to tell my story? That's just the tip of the iceberg, baby.
Well, let me turn it around and talk about somebody who has been with you and who's been obviously somebody you have a great relationship with, one of the former SNLers, and this is Tina Fey, who is
now, that's my baby.
Yeah, tell me
she's
about your relationship with her.
She saw something in me that nobody saw in me. She's the one that said, you know what, this guy is funny. And she did it. Put me in The View, wrote me in all kind of stuff. Thought about me. She thought about me. That's why I love her. That's why I will always love her as my sister. That's why.
Why do you think you two hit it off so well?
Because she believed in me. That's why. It's my girl. All the time.
Chase, I know you're. I can't keep you too much longer.
I get really emotional when I talk about certain people. Excuse me for that. I get really emotional. I can remember the time when we won the Golden Globe, and she said, "I want you to accept the award," and she didn't have to. Sort of a turning point in my career. She put me out front, in front of Clint Eastwood, in front of Spielberg, and they was laughing. That's why I love her, because she's so unselfish. And she gave me hope.
And she really does believe in you.
That's my girl. I was the first person she ever asked to be on the show. And that wasn't a doubt in my mind. I said, I'm with it. I'm riding with you. Not only did she share my hell, she shared my heaven. And God bless her and her family.
And you say that you were both underdogs at SNL to a certain extent.
Come on, man. She was a woman. I was a black guy.
You guys are on top of the world now, though.
I love her, but she's so humble about it.
You know, we talked about your dad and your son earlier in this interview, and your son Tracy Jr., as you say, is the same age now that you were when your father died. How much is this book for your son?
Not just for my son, for my great 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 grandkids. They could pick it up one day and say that was my grandfather. This is what he went through. Maybe one of them might be going through it. And they see how their great-great-grandfather, that's my gift I want to leave to them. When they going through their darkest hours, they go look at the book. Say, my grandfather, he was strong. He made it. He was strong. I can't give up. I'm the new black.
What do you think your dad would say if he could see where Tracy...
My dad is with me right now, and he's smiling. He said, right on. I'm Jimmy's boy. He said, that's my boy. That's what he's saying. I'm Jimmy's boy. Out of all the characters I've ever played in life, at the end of the day, I'm Jimmy's boy. My father was very honest with me, and I'm going to be honest. And people say, do you regret writing your book? No, I don't regret anything I've ever went through, because then I wouldn't be me. I wouldn't be me. And I'm very passionate. I'm not angry. I'm none of those things. I don't see me as none of that. I see myself as a short, fat guy with bad feet, but very passionate. And when I speak, I'm passionate. I get emotional. I have passion.
Man, I love your passion. I thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
It's been a great pleasure. You do great work, and we're looking for, you know, do come to Canada, and then we could do this in person.
Got it.
Thanks, Tracy.
Later.
That's Tracy Morgan on the phone from New York City. His memoir, I Am the New Black, is out now.